The word this morning is expectations. Christ collides with our expectations. Palm Sunday holds many memories for me. 22 years ago, Ron's father died quite unexpectedly after slipping into a coma the week before. 11 years ago, we were in Ecuador, expecting the birth of our first grandchild, and it was Palm Sunday. We didn't know how that village celebrated Palm Sunday, and I will never forget it. I'm going to share it with you. We were in the village of Mulalijo, which is kind of in the highlands of the Andes Mountains, but not, you know, it's about 11,000 feet, not like, you know, way up high. And everybody gathered in the square and was moving up the mountain. So we joined them along with Franklin's family. And we walked about a mile up the mountain on this dirt stony road. And lo and behold, coming toward us was another large group of people. Someone was riding a donkey and there was singing and they were waving palm branches, which we had in our hands because we had gotten them in the village before we started walking up. So we joined this wonderful procession, walked back down into the village, and as we entered the village, little fireworks went off, pop, 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 and one landed on Ron's head, which we will never forget. But they entered into the church, the local church on the square, the Catholic church, and it was too full, you know, everything kind of spread out into the streets, but it was a fantastic, enthusiastic celebration of the whole community, both young and old. In our scripture text today, as we heard, Jesus was on a roll, at least that's what the disciples thought, because finally, Jesus was going to be recognized, and this exceeded their expectations because there was a huge crowd with palm branches, and they were like really super excited. Clothing was laid down on the ground, and people were waving their palms, and Jesus was calmly riding on a donkey. Interesting thing was, is that donkey had never been ridden before. But Jesus was calmly riding on that donkey, which kind of exceeded the disciples' expectations as well as the donkey owner's expectations, I think, too. The crowd, as I said, was super excited. A new rising star that was going to exceed their expectations. They were thrilled with the possibilities. Now, before we go on, I'm going to ask you, what would you celebrate this morning? What are you passionate about? And I'm going to invite you to take your palm branches again and wave them while you shout out what you celebrate and what you're passionate about. And it's okay if you talk on top of each other because that's what crowds do. So, wave your palm branches and shout out what you're passionate about and what you're excited about and what brings you joy. All right, quiet down. Stop the shouting. You know, family, friends, communities, and the government might ask us to stop our celebration, just like what happened so many years ago, just as the Pharisees did, to keep quiet about our passions. And because they didn't want a big ruckus. The Pharisees did not want a big ruckus because, you know, that could kind of upset the political, you know, what's going on in the political realm as well as the religious realm. And they also kind of feared those passionate advocates in the crowd. They didn't want, they weren't so sure about that. And then Jesus collided with all of their expectations. He wept as he entered the city. He wept and he said, "This city is going to be destroyed." Now, that's not such a great thing to say if you're expecting to be a leader. And I suspect it raised some questions in the crowd as well. I think the palm branches probably dropped to the ground, just as we all put our palm branches down. So what do they do with their expectations now? But I would like to say, I noticed I was preparing for this, that they weren't the only ones whose expectations were collided with. As Jesus also experienced dashed expectations that week, he went into the temple and people were selling things. And so he had to toss them out. And I wonder if he didn't think they should have got the message by now. That's not the kind of thing you do in the temple. And on Thursday night, Jesus was the one that had to wash his disciples' feet, because the disciples weren't willing to do it. Their rationale? Well, that's a servant's job. And they had, kind of forgotten to hire one. And then Jesus went out to the garden, which was his custom, and he asked his disciples to also stay awake and pray with him. And he went off a little ways and prayed, "Take this cup from me. Please take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." But God didn't take that cup away. And to top it off, Jesus acutely felt God's absence while he was on the cross, saying, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And his friends left, except for some women at the bottom of the cross. But as he died, he forgave the people, and he still committed his spirit to God, even though it felt like everyone had turned against him. How did Jesus do it? How did he build that strength and willfulness into his life so that he could keep on going in the face of such adversity? I believe I'm going to mention three things. I know there's more. But number one, I think he had a routine of prayer and silence and meditation that sustained his soul. Going to the garden was one of those routines, and it was such a routine that Judas knew that that's where he could take the soldiers, and he would definitely find Jesus there. Entering that silence helps to clear the clutter out of our minds. It's kind of like when the waves recede and the tidal pools remain, or a rushing stream comes into a flat area. Everything settles and you can see straight to the bottom. That's what happens when we're still. We can notice and pay attention and restore our souls in the silence. Another way that Jesus built inner strength, I believe, was through friendships. He wasn't always alone. He enjoyed meals with other people, and he had conversations. He had friends. He invited them to support him when he knew his arrest was imminent, and he spoke to those women from the cross. Number three, Jesus grounded himself in Scripture. I believe the Scripture nurtured his soul and gave him the courage to continue to trust in God's presence even when he felt forsaken. I think that words from Scripture ran through his mind, and some he spoke aloud as he went through his arrest, the interrogation, the sentencing, and that humiliating crucifixion. And I find it so interesting that many of the words of Scripture that reflected his story of this journey are found in Psalm 22. Now, Psalm 22 is a lament, and laments include a complaint, which you will hear, a contrast between the former really good times and the really difficult times that we're going through now. usually includes a prayer for help, and it includes like a strong trust and faith in God. I think Jesus was really familiar with this psalm because he internalized it with his own study of Scripture, possibly when he was a boy growing up through the teachings that he had with his local synagogue leaders. He spoke many of those words, and he felt many of those words as he went through those last 24, 36 hours. And I also think it's interesting that all four of the gospel writers include at least one phrase from Psalm 22, which I think is really interesting too. So I'm going to share the first part of Psalm 22, and I invite you to listen for that complaint, the history, the prayer, the trust, and just the way it really tells the story of what Jesus went through and how Jesus responded to the crucifixion. My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me all alone? Why are you so far from the words of my anguished groans? My God, I cry out all day long, and you don't answer. And so I cry out at nighttime too. Maybe you're awake then, but you're silent. I don't hear you at all. And yet, you are the Holy One. In you, and you, our ancestors put their trust. They trusted you, but you did not disappoint them. They cried out to you, and you delivered them. They trusted you, and you rescued them. But me, I'm just like a little worm. I'm even less than a human being. I'm insulted by one person. I'm despised by another. All who see me, they make fun of me. They gape and they shake their heads. Look, they trusted in God. So let God deliver them because God likes them so much. God, you're the one that pulled me from my mother's womb and laid me on my mother's breast. Even before I was born, I belonged to you. So, God, don't be far from me, for trouble is near and there is no one else to help. The bulls of Bashan encircle me. The mighty bulls of Bashan walk around me, and they open their mouths wide like a lion ready to devour me. My strength is poured out like water. My heart has melted within me. My strength is dried up like a piece of broken pottery, and my tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth, and you've laid me down in the dirt of death. Dogs surround me. Vicious people encircle me. My poor hands and my feet. I can count all of my bones. And meanwhile, they just stare and they gloat, watching me, and they divvy up their garments among themselves, and they cast lots for my clothing. But you, Lord, don't be far from me, because trouble is near, and there is no one else to help me. Deliver me from the sword. Deliver me from the vicious dogs. Rescue me from the lion's mouth and from the horns of the wild bull. How do you nurture your well-being? How do you know that what you're passionate about is worth fighting for? Are there phrases and mantras or words of scripture or other writers that sustain you and give you hope, as I believe those words gave Christ hope as he navigated those last hours? Remember with gratefulness those relationships that support you. Practice being still daily, even if it's just for a minute. This coming week is referred to as Holy Week. Last year, we were in Spain, Ron and I, during Holy Week, and we experienced the solemn processions, walking, going through the streets of almost every city in Spain. We were in about four of them during that week. And they marked with probably 3 to 5 processions, depending on the size of the city, about a mile, 2 mile long track that went through the cathedral and around again. It was, most of them were very solemn. Some were quiet, some sang some you know, funeral type of music, but it was solemn and dark. In our culture, many celebrate with palm branches on one Sunday, and then they come back to church on Easter Sunday and celebrate Easter. I wonder, I'm thinking back now to the story, it's hard to be the lone voice in a crowd, and I wonder how the story would have changed if one, then two, would have supported Jesus instead of being silent. It's hard to know what to do with our dashed expectations when we're joyful and then something happens. And so sometimes I think we just kind of ignore it, like we just want to push through it. And sometimes I think we miss the opportunity to really speak out or embrace the disappointment, pain, grief, and darkness. That is also part of Holy Week. On Thursday at 6 o'clock, here, I invite all ages, from the littlest to the oldest, to come to the Parrot Gallery, and there we're going to remember Jesus' journey again. We're going to enjoy a meal and conversation together with friends, just as Jesus did. And you're going to have the opportunity, if you wish, it's not really part of our culture, I recognize that, but to wash each other's feet or wash each other's hands, just as Jesus did, as a symbol of being willing to serve one another. And we're going to share the bread and the cup, just as Jesus did with his friends, remembering the life that Jesus did and how he lived and how he died. Together, we're going to read scripture and sing and be in silence, just as Jesus did. And I believe, as we experience that story, we will nurture our souls. just as Jesus did.